What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a Monday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter for your Houston Texans. Glad you are with me tonight. And we're going to kick off this show with my good pal, sideline reporter from the Buffalo Bills. You can also hear him middays on WGR. One of the best you're going to find anywhere. We connected in 2015 and been pals ever since. And obviously, my man Sal Capaccio has a lot that he knows about Stephon Diggs, and figured he'd be a good guy to talk about with that and the AFC and Mahomes and everything going on. So let's get to it right here. Sal, good evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, buddy. Always good to talk to you. And, you know, we don't last that long in this business anyway, at least in Buffalo. I'm in my 11th year. I think the longest tenured sideline guy in Buffalo before me was like 3 years. Long time ago. I mean, there's been some interesting guys, though. Like Jeff Burris did it for a couple of years. Remember the old corner, Jeff Burris? He did it.
Yeah, from Notre Dame.
Yeah. I think he was on the sidelines for a little while. But our buddy Joe Biscaglia from The Athletic, he preceded me, actually, for a little while. So we've had some really interesting people. Rich Gensler, the Bull, they call him here. He's been in this role. So it's pretty cool. But how long have you 11 years for me, you got to be close, if not more.
It's the only way I remember it. When you say your date, I remember mine, because we started doing it in 2014.
That's right.
And have been doing it ever since. And it's
that's right.
You know, that 2014 game that was at NRG Stadium, J.J. Watt had to pick six. And I remember, you know, for sideline reporters, you know, your sideline is kind of your territory.
Yeah.
And I just remember at one point looking up and looking over and I'm like, why is that guy in a Bills shirt and why is he on my sideline? And then you kind of pointed at your earphones, you pointed up. I was like, okay, I got it. I got it totally. You were having some issues. And, you know, we've had a few of those over the years. So I understood completely, but you and I really didn't get a chance to kind of chat and meet until after the 2015 season. We met at the combine, and then obviously we've been talking and chatting and friends ever since. So I appreciate you coming on. And obviously with the Buffalo Bills, there's the Stephon Diggs trade, which I'm sure people in Houston are kind of curious from your perspective, Sal. A, what was Diggs like? And B, what did Buffalo people think of the trade? I texted you. You were in Australia. You were waking up to it. You got like God knows how many texts about, hey, what do you think? So I can only imagine what that was like. But just your thoughts about the Diggs trade in general from all sides.
So my wife woke me up at 6 a.m. in Australia to tell me that Stephon Diggs got traded. It was 4 p.m. already in Buffalo.
Yeah.
We're in the next day because you were a day ahead in Australia.
Right.
And I had my phone off because I didn't want people who don't know I'm in Australia, if they're going to be texting me at regular hours, it's not for me over there. So yeah. I had my phone off. So I had no idea. I get up. My first thought was, is it April Fool's? No, it was April 3rd, right?
April 3rd.
I get up and I'm like, and by that time, John, Brandon Bean was already ready to speak to the media at 4 p.m. in Buffalo. And at 6 a.m. where I'm like, oh my God. So then I looked and sure enough, bam, 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 you know how this works. Something happens and you get media outlets around the country. Yep. They're just texting you. And I get CBS radio, ESPN radio, Freddie Coleman's texting me. I got all these people want to come on. And you in Cleveland, Chicago and all that. And I'm like, oh my God, like this happened hours ago and I was sleeping. But it wasn't a total complete shock, right? I mean, this is something that I think everybody's kind of been expecting to happen at some point, even though we all didn't think it would necessarily happen this offseason. I certainly felt once I got to a certain point this offseason, it wouldn't happen, but there was always a chance. But the biggest reason for me, John, was the financial issue of it.
Yeah,
the Bills are eating $31 million.
Yeah.
Like to me, there was just no way the Bills were going to do that. Well, they did that. They decided to eat $31 million in salary cap space by trading Stephon Diggs. I mean, I have nothing bad at all to say about Stephon Diggs as a player in Buffalo. Of course, he was fantastic. I mean, what he did for Josh Allen's career to come here. And you remember the Texans game, the playoff game in 2019 that we were a part of. And that was Josh's second year, but he's throwing to John Brown and Cole Beasley. And, you know, those are really fine players. He didn't have a true number one. So that offseason, Brandon Bean goes out and he gets Stephon Diggs, trades a number one pick for him. And it really elevated Josh's game. Josh took the ascension to the elite quarterback he is because of what Stephon Diggs, you know, brought to the table. So I think for that, you know, the Bills will always be grateful in what he did. I think there came a point though where, you know, this is like any relationship, whether it's personal or business. At some time you're right for each other.
Yep.
But at some point you grow apart, right? And for whatever reason, the two sides grew apart. And I don't think there's anything malicious on each end. And I think there's been too much made of that. I think Josh and Stephon had a good relationship. I don't know if it was strained in any regard by anything, but it doesn't seem like it was really that bad. I don't think Stephon wanted to get away from Josh, I guess, is what I wanted to say. But I do think Stephon felt that, okay, let's run my course here, and we haven't won, and why is that? I'm getting frustrated now. It's time for me to go on. And I think for the Bills' part, to be quite honest with you, I think they need Josh to step up to be even more of the leader and alpha male. And with Stephon Diggs there, you know, with his personality, that's hard to do. So I think that there's a lot of things at play here, but I don't think it's because Stephon Diggs is a bad football player by any regards, obviously, which is, you know, why they were able to get, you know, a second round pick for him and why the Houston Texans felt that he could still be a really, really big contributor.
So with Diggs gone, can everybody run to Vegas with $1 million and make a lot more money just by putting it on a wide receiver at number 28 in the draft? Is that an absolute fait accompli? The Bills are drafting a wide receiver on Thursday night.
On Thursday night, yes. At 28, no. History says Brandon Bean's going to move and probably move up. He does this. What he does, he moved up for Kyer Elam. It hasn't worked out. He moved up for Dalton Kincaid. I mean, this is what he does. He moves up. He is not afraid to make these trades. He actually told us last week, which was really interesting, John, he said he had a deal on the table last year to move down out of the first round, pick up really good. He said, I really liked what I was going to get, but man, I got Dalton Kincaid sitting there. I really want him. And he said, I wanted to go to sleep knowing I got the guy I really feel comfortable with. Right. So that's what he does. Even if there's a scenario to stay put or a scenario to trade down, he generally wants to go up and get the person he really likes. Now that said, with this wide receiver class, you could certainly make an argument that once the top three go, which we all know, you know, whatever, Harrison and Neighbors and Odunze, if you can't get to Brian Thomas Jr., which I think a lot of people think would be perfectly fine for the Bills, they'd love to be able to do that, even by trading up. If you can't do that, what are you doing at 28? Are you sitting here and you're going, we're going to take a guy? Or are you going to trade back and get more assets and then come up with a couple more of these guys, somebody later who is more proper value in that spot? I think that's the question we're answering here in Buffalo. But to answer what you said, I mean, I still would be stunned if it's not a wide receiver at some point on Thursday night.
So how much stock would you put in? They're going up, and they're going up to get one of those three. Now, to get from 28 up to 8, 9, and to find the right trade partner, and to find a trade partner that's willing to make that deal, I mean, it seems that it doesn't fit, but what's the possibility of that happening to get one of those three guys you mentioned, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Malik Neighbors?
Well, the possibilities are probably very, very unlikely, but we have to talk about it, right? Because this has happened before. We have been referencing the Julio Jones trade on WGR. That was from 27-6, right? And think about all the things they give up. Do you think the Falcons are upset they gave up what they did to get Julio Jones? Of course not. They got a Hall of Famer. They broke records a few years later. Their quarterback became an MVP. They went to a Super Bowl. Totally worth it. And then let's remember, there was a trade in 2018, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills from 28-10. They get Patrick Mahomes. They went from 28-10. They get Mahomes. The Bills go down to 28. They get Trey White. And then the next year, they get Josh Allen with all those assets they picked up. Right. I don't think anybody's upset about making a deal like that. It can happen. But man, John, I can't see the Giants, even with Joe Shane and Brandon Bean's relationship. I can't see the Bears at 9. I can't see a team at anywhere around the top 10 going all the way down to 28. That's just too much to give up for a team. And if the Bills really want to get that high, you're talking, of course, multiple second rounder this year, first rounder next year, probably another second or third next year. The asset to pay to get up there would be incredible. Now, I also will keep in mind what Brandon Bean always said about Josh Allen. The year they traded up for Josh Allen, they made a couple moves. They went twice up to get. They had to make two moves to get there. Yep. They finally did it 7. Know what he said? He said, why were you so aggressive? He said, because if it doesn't work out, I'm not here anyway. So I might as well see if I can get it to work out. And I wonder about that. They'd love Odunze. If Odunze falls 10, 11, 12, I think he's making calls. I just don't think he'll get there. Now, Brian Thomas at 20, somewhere in there, I think you can do it.
The one team I think might listen that makes some sense, and it'll sound odd, but you mentioned them, it's the Chicago Bears. And the reason I say that is the Bears have 4 picks, I think, in this draft, maybe 5. I think it's 4 or 5. They have a very low draft capital. Everybody knows about number 1 and number 9. But after that, they've got pick 75 and maybe one other. I feel like the Bears might be that one that said, look, we got our quarterback. We signed Keenan Allen. Maybe we can afford to go down to 28, pick up some more draft capital where we need it down the road. Now, it would have to be picks from this year, which the trade for Stephon Diggs was for a 2025 second rounder. So there might be some GMs that are like, look, I've come this far. I don't want to give up my picks this year. But maybe that maybe the Bears are the team that ends up wanting to deal because they want that excess draft capital that the Bills might be able to give them.
Well, let me give you this scenario, too, and tell me this little bit of anecdote. I think there's some trail of breadcrumbs here, okay? So all year, going back to last year, we all believed the Bills were going to get a third-round comp pick for losing Tremaine Edmonds, all right, to the Chicago Bears. Right, everyone, right. They're going to get an extra third, extra third, extra third. It comes out in March, right before the owners' meetings, they get an extra fourth, not a third. We're all like, wait a minute, what happened here? So I asked Brandon Bean at the owners' meetings, like, how surprised were you? Because remember, they gave up a third to get Rasul Douglas in a trade, and he even basically said, well, we're going to get a third for Tremaine. They didn't get a third. So I'm like, how surprised were you? He was mad, John. He was mad they didn't get an extra third. They only got an extra fourth. He said it really was a major blow, and it really kind of screwed up our plans. So then, that being said, 2 weeks later, they trade Stephon Diggs for a future second. I think he was going to use that third to try and move up in this draft. Now the third's gone. You know what the better way to do it then? If we can, if we can replace it, next year's second, if you want to move up. I think it's all leading up to me that he's going to want to make this move up.
Yeah. And I think it makes some sense. Brian Thomas, if you can't get all the way up there to get one of the three, Brian Thomas is the next in line. And I think after that, it becomes the Texas wide receivers. How much do you love Ladd McConkey? And which I do. And I think he would fit very, very well with in Buffalo with Josh. I think that would be kind of hitting all areas of what Josh does well. But it becomes, look, we got Josh. Do we want to go out and get him a dude? And one of those top three, those guys are dudes. So I'm asked this question, and I feel like the Bills are one of the most talked about teams in the league because of this Diggs trade. And what a lot of national people are saying, oh, the window's closed with Josh. How do people in Buffalo and how do you look at that statement that the window's closed? Diggs is gone. They didn't get much out of Von Miller. You know, they really, the door's closed on the Bills. Your thoughts?
I would answer it this way. I don't think anybody talks about the door being closed on the Kansas City Chiefs with a quarterback that's just as old as Josh Allen. And why is that? Because the Kansas City Chiefs replenished their roster and they got newer and younger. That's what the Bills are doing. Right. They're just going to have a new iteration of the Buffalo Bills. As long as you have Josh Allen, you're going to be fine. But they are going to have a different kind of team now. They're going to get a little bit younger in spots. We saw. Look at all the leadership that walked out the door, whether it be in trade or free agency.
Yep.
Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Saran Neal, and, of course, Stephon Diggs, right? I mean, like, all these people that they're going to be losing, but they're going to have to replenish them. They're going to get younger. The window's not closed. They have Josh Allen. So I think most logical people look at it that way, which is, why would the window be closed? You're just kind of replenishing the roster a little bit. Sure, it might be a little different. Maybe there's some more challenge this year. Could they take a step back? Sure, I could see that. But, John, there's a reason why Vegas still has him as one of the top five teams to win the Super Bowl. It's a reason why Vegas still has him to be the top team to win the AFC East. You look at this roster up and down, it's still very, very good. I mean, last year, we got robbed of a whole year of Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard together. They're going to be together again this year. Look what Rasul Douglas did in a half a season for the Bills last year when he came in, and he was fantastic. They still have a lot of talent. They still have challenges. But you just mentioned a guy who's a big key and X factor to this. What is Von Miller? We don't know. If Von Miller can even get close to what they thought he'd be last year coming back from the injury, I think they feel really good. If not, they're going to have some challenges at edge. They like Rousseau. They like Epinesa. They're not the guys that you game plan for necessarily, though. So there are some challenges around the roster. But more than anything, I just think it's wide receiver. If you can really figure that out here in the next week or so and what you're going to do, I think we're looking at this team a lot differently than a lot of people have for the last few weeks.
I mean, as long as 17 is still slinging it for the Bills, they're going to scare me. No matter what. And it's really – not so much, you know, slinging it. It's, is he going to make plays out of pocket? Is he going to run? Is he going to make big plays? The last two times we've seen him in the playoff game and then obviously up in the rain in 21. I mean, when he needed to make a play, he made a play. We just had no answer. And that might still be the case this year when we face each other here at NRG Stadium. We still may not have an answer. Hopefully we've got better opportunities to answer, but we'll see. So Chiefs number one in the AFC. Who's the number two team in the AFC, in your opinion? Yeah, that is if you think the Chiefs are number one. Maybe you don't.
I do. As long as you have Mahomes and Reed and look what they did with their defense last year. You know, I'm tempted to say Cincinnati with a healthy Joe Burrow, but I'm just not sure. They're still losing some. We don't know what's going on necessarily with T. Higgins here. And I think they have to do a little massaging. But I don't think you can go away from the Ravens, the team that lost in the AFC Championship game. You have a two-time MVP in Lamar Jackson. You know, this is they're bringing in Derrick Henry. I mean, you know, look what they're going to be able to do. They obviously Kyle Hamilton in the middle of that defense and what they've been able to accomplish on that side of the ball last year. So I would say that the Ravens are probably the number two team in the AFC. I don't think the Bills are far behind, if far behind at all, but I would not like put up any fight if someone said that, you know, they would have the Ravens ranked ahead of the Bills.
Okay. Where do you slot the Houston Texans in all this mess?
I think the Texans are certainly a playoff team. They showed that last year. They're probably the best team in the AFC South. And that'll put them right around with the Bengals. I think a healthy Joe Burrow is equal to about what the Texans are. And I think that you could put them pretty close to what I think the Bills are overall. Now, I think the question is about a healthy Joe Burrow, right? That's probably what it comes down to for me. I'm not really totally sure right there, but I think you get them. So you get the Chiefs. I think the Ravens, I think the next tier, Bills, Bengals, Texans, all in there. I'm not ready to put the Texans on the level of the Bills quite yet. We'll see. I love CJ Stroud. I love what they're building there. There's no doubt about that. But I think the Texans are right there with that next group of teams. I would even put them ahead of the Dolphins and the Jets. You know, the Dolphins who made the playoffs last year, the Jets, who I think are going to be better than the Dolphins this year with Aaron Rodgers. I think they could be pretty darn good. So I think you're looking at probably they're one of the top five teams in the AFC. And if someone said they're three, the Bills are four, that's fine. I'm not going to push back too much. I think you still have to prove it a little bit more. If they're going to put them ahead of the Bengals, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But I think those three teams are right there.
You kind of got into it a little bit. We play the AFC East. We cross over. You guys play AFC South. We play AFC East. So you guys will be coming here. We get Miami in Houston as well. And then we go to the Jets and the Patriots. With Aaron Rodgers healthy, how good are the Jets? How scary are the Jets? Or is it one of those things where, you know what? I'll believe it when I see it. He blasted all of three plays in that opener against you guys and then didn't play. They still won seven games. With Aaron Rodgers, where do you see the Jets? With Tua Tagovailoa, where do you see the Dolphins?
I think the Jets can be really, really good with a healthy Aaron Rodgers. Now, my co-host on WGR here in Buffalo, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, he is convinced he will not play a full season anyway because their O-line still isn't that good. He's like, he's 40 years old. Their O-line's not that good. And I think that's a solid argument to make. But he's still Aaron Rodgers. And I think the thing with them is their defense is just so solid at all three levels, and they're so well coached on that side of the ball by Robert Saleh. They have to get better coaching on the offensive side, but, you know, they thought Aaron Rodgers would just fix everything. He should fix at least some of that as far as the coaching is concerned. I mean, they do need a little bit more of a weapon. I think that's why Brock Bowers is usually mocked to them, you know, most of these drafts. Tua and the Dolphins, I think, are going to take a step back. I think this is going to be a transition year for them, not in a positive way, because they got to pay Tua. Tyreek's a little bit older. They got to start figuring out the contracts of them. But man, John, think about the defense, and they lost all those things they lost, and the players that not only they lost, but they're coming back from injury. Jalen Phillips and Chubb, and you know, and you lose guys in the middle of your defense. You lose Xavien Howard on the back end as well. So I just think that the Dolphins, to me, are ready to kind of go the other way than the Jets. I think the Jets should be better with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if the Dolphins are going to be.
We got the Jets. Last year we saw them in December, and well, anybody that saw them after three plays got a chance. I mean, you guys played them twice without Aaron Rodgers. Bill Belichick does not end up with a coaching job. Were you surprised?
I think initially I was. As it went on for a little bit, it started to not surprise me much and make a little bit more sense. Because, look, the trend in the league is to go younger coaches and relatability to a lot of these players and fresh minds and fresh thinking. That's not Bill Belichick. And I think that owners kind of saw that, you know, he's going to want to do things his way. It's been a one way of doing it. What I really did think, though, was, John, that some team is going to value having Bill Belichick on their sidelines to break the all-time record, right? That's going to be worth something to an owner. But at the end of the day, I give owners credits. They didn't go for that. They said, look, we want the best candidate possible. That's not Bill Belichick. And I've always said, I was kind of first on this, and I got hammered for it, and I still believe it. Like, I would say years ago that I just thought that time had kind of passed Bill Belichick by as a head coach. I think he's a fantastic football mind. He really is. There's no doubt about that. But I think over the last several years we've seen, it's been mostly kind of Tom Brady covering up. Even when they had warts, they didn't have to worry about him because they had Brady. That is not to say Bill Belichick's a bad coach. Here's my hot take. You tell me if you agree, okay? You tell me what you think about this, okay?
Okay.
All right, I love it. Just you and I talking ball here.
Okay.
So I've said for years I don't think Bill Belichick is the greatest coach ever. I think he's the most accomplished coach ever. If you want to call it greatest, like who the best is at their job, I think it's Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs went to 4 Super Bowls and won 3 with very average quarterbacks over a 12-year period. You give me a really average roster, or average quarterback with a good roster, I'm taking Joe Gibbs over Bill Belichick.
Here's the other word you didn't use. They were 3 different quarterbacks that he won championships with. I mean, I think that to me is what kind of blows me away, because for all those years of, you know, the Patriot way, the Patriot way. Well, when Brady left, we found out, well, you know, the Patriot way had a lot to do with number 12. And I would imagine that was a good day, because that was one of the things I thought about when he, you know, retired was, oh, you got to be happy about that. He's out of the AFC East. But the Bills had sort of kind of turned the corner on that, where you guys had kind of flipped the script. For a long time, it was no matter what happened, the Patriots are going to find a way to beat you guys. And then all of a sudden that script started changing, and it never flipped back. It never flipped back to the Patriots. They were not what they had been. You guys had completely turned a corner on them. I don't think you're out of the realm of possibility. I think it's funny, because when Mark brings up and we bring up great coaches, Joe Gibbs is one of the first ones he brings up for that reason, because they had 3 different quarterbacks.
And I think all not Hall of Famers.
And all different. Really, you know, all 3 different guys. Yep. In some way, shape, or form. So Joe Gibbs is a guy that gets no credit for that, which is very surprising. He created the one-back offense, which is what everybody uses now, in a way to stop Lawrence Taylor. So I think what's tough to argue, obviously he's very accomplished. I think Bill Belichick might be the best defensive mind that we've had.
He may.
That I think you could totally sell me on. But when you look at what they were able to do, I mean, that was a Brady-led operation, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Belichick did a great job. You still have to have that guy. But I think what we found out in later years that, you know, maybe it was more about Brady and Gronk and, you know, having all the slot receivers they had and all the success they had. Look, I know they all played a role. I know Nick played a role. I know Belichick obviously played a massive role. But the players they had, having Brady at quarterback, you and I probably could have won a Super Bowl with Brady at quarterback, just saying, look, man, whatever you want to do, let's do it. And I think that's going to end up being, down the road, the discussion with Andy Reid. Because, look, Andy Reid won a bunch of NFC championships, got the 1 Super Bowl with Donovan McNabb and his Eagles quarterbacks. He got to the playoffs with Alex Smith, and then he gets this wunderkind that takes over, and, okay, he's got Patrick Mahomes. Now, you argue Reid has helped make Mahomes, but I think you could go the other way too. Mahomes has definitely helped make Andy Reid one of the greats of all time. I mean, 3-5 years or whatever it is.
They're so good for each other, right? Like Belichick and Brady. And that's the thing about Belichick and Brady. They were so great for each other. They really did need each other. But my example, I always say, like, in a funny way on the radio, is I compare Belichick to Brooks from Shawshank Redemption. He was institutionalized for 20 years. And once he had to actually go out and, you know, figure it out a little bit differently, he couldn't do it because he was so used to doing everything the way that he kind of knew it. And
that's a great one. They definitely had their way. There's no doubt about it how they did things. We've had plenty of Patriot way, you know, employees in our building. But
yes,
I think what's been fascinating for us is to watch how Nick, I don't want to say has, you know, changed or adapted or whatever, but just, I think everybody had this fear of, well, you know, it's going to be done how the Patriots do things. And you look at what Nick's done. It's like, no, not really. He's doing things the way that he believes best for the Texans, which is what they always say. But I think he's actually been one to be able to pull it off. Okay. I had this conversation with, I think it was somebody back in the building. We were talking about this. I always think this is fascinating because we can always talk about the great teams in the league. But there's always a team. Obviously, we were that team last year. We were the team that came out of nowhere. We came out of, you know, 3-13-1. We were 31st in the power rankings. Nobody thought anything of the Texans. And then all of a sudden, we start putting some of the pieces together. Great coaching staff, great coordinators, players, rookies are tremendous. Man, look at that. We should have seen it coming. We didn't see it coming. Which one team in the NFL do you think about where you go, you know what, a good draft here, another couple of additions here. Boy, this team may not be this year. They may not be the Detroit Lions. It was Detroit a few years ago. What team do you look at and say, I think this team is one to watch in the next couple of years? They could be the one that turns the corner and gets in the playoffs and makes something of themselves. That's really kind of off the radar screen now. I got one. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, and first of all, I would go right to your team there, Houston, but they've already made the playoffs, right? Because I'm a big C.J. Stroud fan. By the way, my co-host, I mean my colleague, Eric Wood, who used to be a center for the Bills, as you know, Eric talks about C.J. Stroud, and he says all the time, he goes, dude, this guy sounds like he's a 30-year-old, 8-year veteran. He talks the way he talks sometimes. It's incredible, right? So anyway, we got a lot of respect for that team. So Houston, the team I would choose, the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons have so much talent on offense. And look, I don't know, you know, Kirk Cousins, he's not going to be in the Mahomes, Allen type of, you know, stratosphere here as far as quarterbacks. And he doesn't have to be, though. He's a really good quarterback, though. Puts up numbers. But, oh, my God, look at the talent they have on offense with Bijan and Kyle Pitts and Drake London. And then they sell Darnell Mooney, I think they grabbed, too, right?
Rondale Moore, I believe.
Oh, my God. And then you look at the defensive side. They need a little bit of work. But, man, they get an edge rusher in the draft. They, you know, they're a little younger there. I think they can help themselves. And they're in a division, by the way, that's there for the taking. See, that's the same way I look at Houston, right? Not only does Houston have all this talent, they're in a division that they can take advantage of, I think, considering where everybody else is right now. I think the same thing about the Atlanta Falcons. If they can kind of get a couple of pieces here on defense in the draft, I think they could take advantage of that in the NFC South and be the next team.
My complete wild card is the Arizona Cardinals.
Woo,
as crazy as it sounds, because the Cardinals have a lot of draft capital this year, and if they manage it right, they can get more. And I think Jonathan Gannon proved last year, like, they gave us all kinds of trouble at home. Now, I think they're more Detroit. I think this is a year where they can get to 6-7 wins. But give them another draft. I think Cardinals could be a team kind of way from way back that could end up being that particular team. And we all know if Caleb Williams is all that, then the Bears could be a team that they've got a boatload of talent. I just don't know that Eberflus is the right fit. I don't know if he's the right coach for them. I will find out. The other team, if you plot the right quarterback in with them, they could really be something as the Vikings. I think the Vikings' offensive talent, the skill players are exceptional. Two really good tackles. The defense is Brian Flores led, so they do some different stuff. They get after it. I still think that defense is not quite all that. But I think if they drop in Drake May somehow, they move up to 3, the Patriots pick, however they get there, they pick Drake May, that could get interesting with all that talent around him. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy does all that, but I think Drake May could. Those are a few off the beaten path. I'm like,
You know what's interesting about the Vikings is, I wonder, even if that happens, how long it'll take. Because the pick the Bills got for Diggs from Houston, the second rounder is the Minnesota second rounder next year.
Oh, yeah.
So in Buffalo, we're all thinking, okay, if Minnesota's not good this year, you're talking about a top 40 pick.
That's exactly the way we were thinking about it. When we saw that deal that dropped us out of the first round, we're like, all right, what do we get back? Oh, we got Minnesota's second round pick. Oh, this could be good. They could be kind of lousy, but that's what everybody thought about the Texans too last year. What are you trading at number 3? What are you trading next year's pick for? That's going to be a top 3 overall. No, it ended up being number 27. You know, the Texans bet on themselves, which was kind of nice to see. Sal Capaccio, WGR in Buffalo, sideline reporter, reveling in the fact that the Yankees have gotten off to a good start, even though Aaron Boone's getting kicked out for saying nothing, which is kind of interesting. And the Astros are struggling. So I don't even know that I want to do this, but how good can the Yankees be this year? Good God, I can't believe I just asked that.
So as you and I are talking here today, we're recording a little bit. They are currently, and they've gone, 17 straight innings without scoring a run. So I think based on that, they're 0-0 against the A's after going extra innings with no runs against the Rays yesterday. Yeah. I don't know why. I think they could still be really good. And by the way, they're doing this without Gerrit Cole. They're playing close to 700 baseball without Gerrit Cole pitching right now. But they have to find a little bit more offense because right now Judge is not hitting and Stanton is not hitting. Now, that being said, I'm going to tell you this. I did not realize how really incredible of a baseball player Juan Soto was until I watched him in a Yankees uniform. John,
listen,
you don't have to
tell this city, man. They know.
Holy cow. Is he amazing?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And I hate the fact that he is a Yankee, but the city of Houston knows.
Yes.
They know all too well, and we hate that. My friend, we do not hate you. You know that. I love you to death. You're my brother from another mother. Appreciate you coming on with me, and thank you very much, my friend.
You got it. Enjoy the draft. I know you guys will. And thanks for all your work coming on WGR when we've had you on. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Anytime, brother. Thank you, Sal. Boom. All right, brother. That's perfect.
Perfect.
That's exactly awesome. What I needed. All right, man.
Sounds good. Have a good show.
Where are you going to be? Where are you going to be for the draft? Are you in Buffalo or are you going to
Detroit? I'll be in Buffalo, just in the media room that night. You know, my boss even asked, do you want to go to Detroit? I'm like, no, there's nothing that happens there. Yeah, I need to be here. So.
I know. Everybody asks me if I'm going to Detroit, I'm like, I've never gone to Detroit. I got 17 and a half hours of radio that yeah. I end up doing.
All the people are at the war room in the city you're in. It doesn't
right. matter. They don't understand that. They just know that. They know. My mom even asked me, they live in Wisconsin. She's like, are you coming to Detroit for the draft? I'm like, Mom, I never go to the city for the draft. How do you not know this?
That's
she's like,
right.
Oh, I didn't know. She's the sweetest thing. But I'm like, oh, Mom.
I love it.
All right, brother. Great to
see
you.
Talk to you later.
Fantastic stuff there with my buddy Sal Capaccio, WGR Radio in Buffalo, and sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills. We get back. Let's dive into this draft and what's going on with all things Texans going in the lab with Drew Doherty next right here on Texans All Access. Welcome back to this Monday edition of Texans All Access, an off-season episode of All Access, and all off-season episodes are brought to you by Mattress Firm, the official sleep partner of the Houston Texans. Spread the word. You can score bonus savings on better sleep during Mattress Firm's Friends and Family Sale. Hurry in to save up to $700 with your extra discount. Plus, get a free adjustable base on select beds. I don't know if there's any way to segue into Mattress Firm into In the Lab, but I'm going to try because both Drew Doherty and I sleep on beds, and there you go. And that's who's part of In the Lab. So let's do it right now. Me, Drew, In the Lab, now.
I'm pumped, man. I don't recall, like, people ask me, wow, it's never been this way. And I say, yes, you're right. It's never been this way. However, it reminds me in a way of the 11 offseason going into 12, mm-hmm. merged with the 12 offseason going into 13, because, yeah, 13 sucked.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of optimism that year, justifiably so, because you had
sure.
started 11-1. You stumbled, but, hey, you thought you added some pieces that were going to make things better, but you didn't have the quarterback you have now. And that quarterback then, Matt Schaub, showed some cracks in the foundation.
Right.
Later in the 12th season, in retrospect, we see it now. You're not seeing that. You've got a really robust young quarterback who's was at a higher level than Schaub was then, is at a higher level than him now, and is only ascending. And man, you've added a lot of weapons. What were the weapons around Schaub 12 going into 13? You had Andre Johnson, and he was still Andre mm-hmm. Johnson. He was amazing. You yeah. added DeAndre Hopkins, but he was right. a rookie. But right. other than that, Kevin Walter left, and Kevin Walter really, you didn't see or hear from him again. He was injured in 13 in Tennessee. Owen Daniels played and was good, and it was Owen Daniels.
Yep.
But that was it. It was Owen and Andre and rookie DeAndre Hopkins. You didn't have these ascending guys like yep. Nico, like Tank. Now you've added in Dalton Schultz or re-added him in. Stephon Diggs. And it brings me to this. We heard on Monday from CJ Stroud, you've touched on this with Vandermeer, but we heard about the excitement over John Metchie III.
Yeah.
Those guys are working out, and you love to see it because this time a year ago, CJ had locked down pretty much and was just doing final 30 visits before the draft. Now he's actually working with guys he's going to throw to in the fall. He's working with Tank Dell. He's working with Nico Collins. He's working with Stephon Diggs. And John Metchie was in the mix as well. And he said, man, he looked really good. And it's something that bears repeating. And I think we ought to dig a little deeper because last year was Mechie's rookie year. He didn't play. Right. His knee was blown out and he was recovering from that. He had freaking lymphoma.
Yeah.
And was coming off of that. Yet he caught a few passes, ran some end arounds, was dipping his toes in the water, but he was down the chart of guys who made big, big impacts catching the ball as a receiver. What's it mean if John Metchie in 2024, John, looks like the guy that the Texans invested a second-round pick in and thought, hey, we need this guy to be a second-round pick. We need this guy to be a big part of our football team.
Yeah,
you add him to that mix, man.
Yeah, it's a massive... it would be massive for this team in some way, shape, or form. I mean, I still feel like, and D'Amico hit on it, but I think it bears repeating. You just can't have enough weapons. You really can't. If you think about a 17-game season and how long and arduous a 17-game season is, it is brutal. I mean, it is, holy cow.
Yeah.
It's so long. I mean, it's long for us. We're not even playing.
We saw it at its zenith in that regard in New York in the rain.
Yes.
When you went into it without Tank Dell. Nico got hurt first or second play of the game. I don't think Noah Brown was kind of limited. They just, everything funneled over to Noah, and he got, you know, taken out of the game with that excellent center. You don't have that if you have all these weapons at your disposal, or, you know, some of one or two of them is gone. So what?
We talked a lot about this in the fall, and we'd look at the injury report and look and go, okay, well, this guy's an injury report. Okay. Well, as long as we have two, we have Robert, we have Nico, we have Tank and Robert, we have Nico and Robert, you know, however you could put the two combinations, you know, the three guys together in a combination of two, you'd feel that much better. You'd like to be able to say, hey, we want to have three. We need to have three. We got to have three. And that just basically was the way of saying we got to have more weapons.
Yeah.
Now, Joe Mixon being involved, Dalton Schultz continuing to be involved. Yeah, you know, obviously Tank and Nico, and then you bring Diggs in. Diggs didn't miss but one game in Buffalo, and I think that's something that has to be kept in mind. Like you said, Mechie missed rookie year, obviously because of, you know, what he was dealing with lymphoma. Tank missed five games at the end of the year. Nico has missed a number of games in his first 2 years. I think he missed a couple last year.
He missed all the Jets game.
He missed all the Browns game, and then he missed the Titans game. So. He missed.
And otherwise, games. He was magnificent.
Right.
Golly.
But you have to prepare. You have to. I'm not saying that the trade for Diggs is some sort of insurance, or that Mechie ends up being that kind of insurance. Okay, well, we got these three guys with Mechie's insurance. No, that's not the way Mechie's looking at it. I can promise you that. John Mechie's looking at it saying, I didn't have the type of year I wanted to have my first year back on the field.
Yeah.
I'm going to have that year this year. And obviously, more time you spend with your quarterback, the better off you're going to end up being. And so I feel for him in some sense, because it's the third year physically that he's been here. It's really only the second year that he's been a football player, really, for the Texans. But what have we always said about rookie year one to year two guys?
Exactly.
Make and take that leap. And if he's able to do that.
It's the T word, man. Tantalizing.
Yeah, very much.
Tantalizing if he can do that, and he can actually. It's actually year one to year two for him, and he makes the leap like you're talking about. Because D'Amico brought that up on Monday. This is a big year for a lot of these rookies, year one to year two.
Yeah,
you got to lump him in there. I know he's not technically a rookie. He was.
So
he was a rookie.
I kind of just, you know, Mark and I have talked about things on and off the air, and so I had walked down the cafeteria, I'd walked back here, and I just, as I was walking, I was thinking, and I happened to see Mechie with Tank going outside, and I just happened to think, even after the Diggs trade, I still felt like receiver needed to be on the platter, because this is a receiver class that platter's nice.
It's deep, man.
There's caviar over here, Marvin Harrison Jr. There's, you know, filet mignon over here. That's Roma Dunze. I mean, you've got all kinds of things on the buffet, and you don't want to miss out on a buffet. Even if your buffet is really good back home, you still want some of it. So I always thought, okay, maybe it's not pick 42, 59, 86. But there's going to be a receiver drafted. And then I saw those two together, and it just, for some reason, the thought and the question crystallized. And I asked Mark, I said, do you think that they might, because it's only his second year and what he's come off of, that they look at Mechie as kind of their 2024 draft pick at receiver? And I was like, no, I don't think you can look at it that way, because you still have players in this 2024 draft that are different from everybody else that you have here, that are explosive, provide big plays. Fit all size, shape, speed, all that kind of stuff. And you should want to definitely protect for the future, because you may not have Nico next year. You may not have Diggs next year. So you got to be prepared for that. Not saying that you go take a receiver with 42 or 59 even, but you've got to take a receiver at some point in a really, really good draft of receivers. But Mechie is going to, if anything, take whatever rookie's in there, and he's like, I'm going to beat that dude out so completely and fully that they're going to think about me as the number three guy, sometimes even the number two guy, that I'm so far removed from that I'm going to have that kind of year.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's what ends up happening.
Tantalizing.
Tantalizing.
T-word, tantalizing, because I still think you can add in a a rookie. And
yeah, absolutely.
Why not stockpile?
I think they will.
Why not stockpile a strength? Make it happen.
Strength to strength. Yeah.
So tantalizing. All right, let's pivot a little bit to a different playmaker spot on offense. You brought up Joe Mixon and what he can do. A lot of people have thrown dirt on the, I think, premature grave that is Dameon Pierce. Let's just, best case scenario, Dameon Pierce, the light bulb goes off. He's figured out this offense. He's a piece and he's a weapon in this offense. What does that look like? If that's the case, if everything goes swimmingly for Dameon Pierce, because man, that guy was the like one of the lone bright spots from 2022.
Right.
What was just a nasty campaign, 2022. He was so much fun to cover. He was such a breath of fresh air on and off the field. What if he's a lot closer to who that guy was than what we saw of him last year? What's that mean for this team?
Well, here's, and I've had this thought of how, and Mark asked me this, how our defense is going to game plan to stop the Texans. And I think one of the things that you have to do when you game plan, the first thing you have to do is, okay, what do we want? What do we want to take away? What can we not live with getting beat with? Is it CJ throwing the ball? Is it a particular receiver? Is it a particular type of throw? You know, hey, we're not giving them deep throws. Like, we're just not. And there were teams that did that. They just said, you're not throwing the ball deep on us. Just, mm-hmm. Everything's going to stay in front. Are they going to take away Schultz sometimes if he gets hot? What and who are they going to try and take away from a week-to-week basis? If you have Dameon Pierce going well with Joe Mixon, it makes that question that much more complicated mm-hmm. for defensive coordinators to go, oh, man, I don't want to have to play base because then they put, you know, 12 personnel out there with Schultz and Jordan, Brevin, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're in trouble because at 12 personnel, you're thinking, well, run game. And then all of a sudden they put those two guys in there and you got a linebacker covering one of those two and you're eating, throwing the ball all day long. You can do so much when you have that run game going, and then you can just get in, you know, 12 personnel with whoever your wide tight end is going to be. Hopefully Quatoriano is back and you put him on the field with Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're a true run blocking 12 personnel team or formation and you're hammering with one of those backs. But then you go to hammer, oh, play action. One of those tight ends gets open, probably Schultz. But Quatoriano has shown in some play action situations last year before he was hurt. Atlanta was a great one. He went up and climbed the ladder and went and got one. That's the kind of thing he could provide.
Yeah.
So you're making defenses declare, how are you going to stop us? Are you going to play a bunch of quarters or play quarter, quarter, half? Are you going to play man? Are you going to double somebody? Are you going to try and stay in nickel? Do you want to be in your base defense? What you're going to have are answers to the test. And once everybody gets on the same page and they understand, okay, take a look, guys. Look at this defense. What are they taking away? Well, they're taking away Nico. Okay, let's be cognizant of that. Let's make sure they can't take away Nico because we're hurting them with other things.
Yeah.
And you don't have that a lot in this league. There are some teams that have it. You know, but for a long time, the Chiefs, when they had Tyreek and they had Kelsey, like, okay, who are you going to take away? Which one? You're going to double Tyreek? Okay, well, Kelsey's going to kill you. You're going to double Kelsey? Well, Tyreek's man-to-man. You're in a lot of trouble. Now, the Chiefs have found a way to do it differently, obviously, without Tyreek. And the connection with Mahomes and Kelsey is just off the charts. But the Texans have more avenues for how they can get down the road if one is blocked. This other one should work.
Yeah.
When you have Dameon Pierce, I think I would like to see Dameon get more involved in the passing game.
And that's a good spot to stop. That was kind of a deep dive on the offense with the thought of what does Dameon Pierce bring to this offense in 2024? In fact, I was doing a talk with our ticketing office today, and that question came up. What about Dameon Pierce in year three? Could get really interesting. Could get very interesting. I do think there will be a running back added through the draft. They just added a veteran. Who was it? Who the Texans re-sign? We also kicks too. Oh, that just gave it away. We'll discuss that and more around the NFL next on Texans All Access. We got one final segment of this edition of Texans All Access brought to you by Mattress Firm, the official sleep partner of the Houston Texans. Spread the word. You can score bonus savings on better sleep during Mattress Firm's Friends and Family Sale. Hurry in to save up to $700 with your extra discount. Plus, get a free adjustable base on select beds. A guy that will be sleeping nice and tight in Houston again, Dari Ogunbowale. Yes, he is back. Texans have re-signed our favorite backup kicker and complimentary running back, special team star, Dari Ogunbowale, back. I think it's year three, right? I think. 22, 23, 24, I believe. So it'll be year three in Houston. Obviously, he started his career in 2017 with the Texans and then bounced around a few teams and came back. So think about it from that perspective. 2017, I believe, was his first year. I remember a coach telling me that, yeah, he won't make it through training camp. And now he's working on year eight. So congratulations to Dari coming back to the Texans. There was a, I don't want to say minor move, but it was a move, a trade in the NFL. And because it includes a quarterback, a former number two overall drafted quarterback, it probably makes a little bit of news. But Zach Wilson, former Jets number two overall pick, traded to the Broncos in exchange for some late round picks, or a pick swap, I guess, in the late rounds. So Zach Wilson heads to Denver, which leaves them a quarterback room of Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson. The Broncos will be moving up for a quarterback, or that's what it appears that they're going to be. Speaking of the Broncos, they got new uniforms. They broke out their retros, which are cool, with those orange with the kind of lighter blue helmets. Those are pretty much fire. Those are cool. But their new uniforms, okay. I don't know. Don't really want to get into uniforms too much because we will be out for their uniform reveal tomorrow. That's going to be a blast, Mark and I. So we'll do All Access live from the location, which I think is the Post. So we'll be out there for that. So looking forward to finally getting it out there. And by the way, 10 o'clock tomorrow is the unveiling. 11 o'clock, my math is correct. I think Hannah and Cal are going to be on with Landry and Lopez. So make sure you check that out on Sports Radio 610. Matt Ryan, former Colt. Well, really, we know him as a Falcon. Officially retires. He'd been in the booth, but I guess he hadn't officially said, I'm done. Well, he said that today. 15 years in the NFL. Matt Ryan officially retires, the 2016 MVP, 2008 Offensive Rookie of the Year. Hangs him up. Is he going to Canton? Oh, that's a good question. And we're out of time. We'll talk about that at a later date. He and Phillip Rivers are probably eating at the same table. Okay, appreciate you guys as always. Thanks to my buddy Sal Capaccio, Drew Doherty for In the Lab, all of you for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Texans.